You are listening to the Open Web Application Security Project. OWASP podcast number 11 was recorded on February 23rd, 2009. We have with us today Steve Christie and Bob Martin. Steve Christie is a principal information security engineer in the Security and Information Operations Division at the MITRE Corporation. Since 1999, Steve has been the editor of the Common Vulnerabilities and Exposures, the CVE list, and the chair of the CVE editorial board. Bob Martin, CSSLP, is a principal engineer at the MITRE Corporation. The majority of Bob's time has been spent working on the CVE, OVAL, KPEC, and CWE security standard initiatives, in addition to basic quality and measurement and management of software projects. Gentlemen, would you care to start by telling us your background in IT and how you got involved in information security and application security?
Hi, this is Robert Martin from the MITRE Corporation. And basically, I got into IT right when I got out of college, or maybe even before that. Did some work in software, moving applications from one platform to another. And then when I arrived here at MITRE 26 years ago, I basically have been helping the government do IT transformation for, maybe the first 15 years here. And somewhere in the middle of that, got very interested in the quality of the code we were working with and trying to improve it, which somehow led to me leading MITRE's year 2000 efforts. And that was a nice five-year stint that ended up taking me all the way to Moscow, talking to the Russians about their preparedness. That was something I didn't expect. But at the same time, the whole cybersecurity and vulnerability work was going on here at MITRE, and they clashed during Y2K time, and afterwards I started working on that issue, trying to help the quality of code actually encompass the concept of secure code.
Hi, this is Steve Christie with MITRE. My background in IT goes back to high school when I started getting really interested in video games. This was the early 80s, the original video game boom, and I wanted to figure out how to program them. I quickly learned that I couldn't do that easily with zero knowledge, but I had at least gotten to the point where I could program a computer and it did something that I just didn't expect. And certainly that's a theme of computer security. But I went to college, did a computer science bachelor's, and then started work at MITRE hitting on 19 years ago, I think, now. Initially, I started in artificial intelligence, but in the mid-90s or so, some of the funding for AI started drying up a little bit, and someone else in the company was working on some security work, and he didn't have enough time, and I was available, so I took some of that on. That turned out to be supporting a program that was being used for secure source code analysis, and then I started doing some vulnerability scanning of MITRE systems to try and ferret out what the vulnerabilities were, try and convince sysadmins to apply patches, which was lots of fun. And then I started on the Common Vulnerabilities and Exposures, the CVE effort, because within the context of trying to do the vulnerability scanning, our vice president asked a very unreasonable question, which was, how are you guys dealing with protecting us against CERT advisors? Completely unreasonable question. And we couldn't answer it. And we couldn't answer it because we needed something like standardized identifiers in order to be able to effectively communicate about vulnerability information. And so that's where I started getting involved in CVE. That was 10 years ago, as of January 2009, when we initially publicly proposed the idea. Somewhere around the 10,000th or 12,000th CVE, you start to get a sense that, gee, all these programmers are all making the exact same kinds of mistakes. So I started, that started really building up an interest in the software security side of things. Why don't we try and make code better so that we don't even have the vulnerabilities in the first place? So I've been working with Bob Martin on the CVE side of things when he started to move into the software assurance arena, and so that's how we got together and started working on the common weakness enumeration. And now that's been, it's now been 3.5 years or so, and here we are today.
So how did this get started, the top 25?
Okay, this is Bob Martin again. As Steve said, we've been working on this idea of the common weakness enumeration to really lay out how is it that developers can avoid introducing vulnerabilities into their applications. But we've grown that list into almost 700 different items. And it's a little daunting to walk up to that list and say, where do I start? In fact, one of our colleagues at SANS Institute said, you know, a lot of people are having that trouble. So the idea of getting a lot of our colleagues and people we've worked with over the years in industry, government, and academia together to figure out which ones really need to be the starting point, which ones really are very common in applications, both applications that people buy or get off open source resources, or that have developed for them, what are those issues, and probably which ones are the most important. And so that led us to bring together this group, this effort, and between Thanksgiving and shortly after New Year's, we had this little group going through iterations, which Steve took the lead as the writer, editor, and many times initial author to try to bring together something sharp and focused that people could use as a good starting place, as the thing that you at least need to be addressing these or discussing these, and that tools in the area should address, and training should address, and procurement should address, and all of those really hard questions should at least start from someplace, and we offer up the top 25 as that place to start.
So who was involved with this project?
In the previous work we had done, both in the CVE work as well as the building of CWE, which was also a community affair, we basically, as MITRE, were able to sign very restrictive non-disclosure agreements with pretty much all the content owners in the software vulnerability scanning and assessment arena, and dumped that all into a big soup pot. And so that's how we got CWE created. But those same people, that same community, we were able to bring into addressing this issue. But it wasn't just the researchers. It was also the people who are creating and supporting, you know, software as a service or as their product line. So, you know, little companies like Microsoft and Oracle and Apple and Sun, they contributed, as well as the vendors in the space, the Fortify, the Ounces, but also a lot of independent researchers. So it was a large swath of the different kinds of perspectives and different backgrounds. We also had semantic and, you know, white box testing type tools that gave us perspectives into the non-commercial software and the non-open source. So when we talk about the top 25, we really were going beyond what we knew from CVE, which only dealt with that publicly known space.
The initial trigger for this came with some people from NSA talking to Alan Power at SANS, who wanted to focus efforts on a fairly small number of issues that were responsible for the largest number of vulnerabilities. We have an ongoing relationship with SANS, building on 10 years now, of collaborating in these kinds of efforts. So SANS pretty much immediately came to us and mentioned the top 25 idea. And so we moved from there. We collected through our own contacts and through SANS's contacts, we were able to establish communications with a lot of different players, as Bob has outlined. And then we were able to navigate through to create a mailing list through which we could have different discussions and then propose incremental versions of the list. We also had an opportunity to speak with some members of the OWASP ES API working group that was hosted down at Aspect Security by Jeff Williams. And the feedback from that group, which consisted largely of a half an hour, hour-long discussion as part of a three-day summit on ISAPI, was also very influential. So we have been able to use a lot of our industry connections, including our close working relationship with SANS, in order to bring in such a variety of people.
Gentlemen, can you please tell us more about the selection process and actually coming up with the top 25?
So as the document editor, I took an initial cut, which originally consisted of around 40 different CWEs. These were all over the map. They were based roughly on my understanding as the CVE editor of what I was seeing that was out there being publicly reported. However, the kinds of software for which people will publicly report vulnerabilities is not necessarily the same kinds of software, certainly not the same kinds of verticals as you might see with respect to consulting organizations. So I took those initial 40, narrowed them down painstakingly and painfully down to 25, and then the initial version posed the 25 and then listed the other 15 or so as other possibilities. This was then submitted to people on the mailing list and others who were offline from the mailing list, and just basically asked for their feedback. Are there things here that are on the 25 that you don't think belong? And are there things that are on the periphery that you think we should promote or add? And so we went through a sequence of, I think it was four different versions where we finally settled on something. One of the interesting things I thought was, and given the diverse community, should have been fully expected, was that you had a wide range of opinions. So with consultants who worked on a lot of web application security things, they had no visibility into how bad of a problem buffer overflows were, for example. And you had people who worked with a lot of unmanaged code that was not web-related wondering, well, why should we include things like SQL injection or cross-site scripting that is nowhere near the kinds of problems that I find in the software that I look at. Around the second version or the third version, Chris Weissopel from Veracode with some backup from Mark Cox of Red Hat suggested that we adopt some kind of metric in order to try and objectively determine what items should go onto the top 25. And what was proposed and what we tried to follow was a notion of the prevalence of the weakness times the severity of the weakness if it actually occurs within software. The hope was that maybe we could use raw data in order to really objectively be able to determine both the prevalence and the severity of each weakness. And the closest data source that would be available for that would be CVE. However, CVE is really about vulnerabilities. It's about what happens after programmers have made any number of different mistakes that then enable their software to be attacked. And if you think about things like closed source vendors, they might publish that there's a vulnerability in their software, but they aren't necessarily going to go down to the lowest level and describe how exactly a programmer might have made a mistake. So even though it looked like something like CVE might have useful data, it actually didn't, because CVE is built around vulnerabilities as opposed to weaknesses. In addition, CVE is only one portion of the covering only one portion of the software that's out there. That is the software that people have decided to audit, and this does not cover all of the in-house custom-built software that never sees the light of day outside of the organization that actually developed it. So while I wanted to be able to use real objective measures, the fact is that the data just isn't there to really help to do this. However, that did help with respect to trying to prioritize items, as well as with respect to making some tough decisions as to what was going to be number 25 versus what was going to fall off the list and not necessarily even be mentioned. There was no shortage of opinions by the 40-plus individuals who gave us feedback. So even trying to capture the notion of prevalence and severity was very useful in helping to navigate through that mess.
Just a follow-up point. The 40-plus people that we list as the contributors, those are the people that actually provided substantive comment, either one, twice, three times, whatever. There were several additional people, if not dozens, that received copies of the top 25 list, but basically were lurking or just coming back and saying, hey, this is pretty good. They aren't listed. They're not there as contributors. And I will say it was amazing in the different rounds of comments. Each round had at least half of the participants providing substantive feedback to us. And Steve had a wonderful time trying to bring together and consolidate those different opinions and come up with what should be the way forward. And all of that is actually documented out on the top 25 list. There is a change log part to the website that summarizes and talks about our comments and what we did with them. And that was also part of our process, that we fed back to people, you know, here's the result of that last round, here's the new document, and oh, by the way, here's all the things we received and what we did with them. Now, we didn't list the comments individually, but we did, you know, boil them down. And so we tried to make this as transparent and as open and, you know, rational decision-based as possible.
So can you tell us how the CWE Top 25 Dangerous Programming Error List compares to the sacred text, the OWASP Top 10?
Well, the OWASP Top 10, as participants in OWASP know, is really dealing with web application security. Now, many of the items that are in the OWASP Top 10 certainly apply to lots of other software as well, but it's also dealing with things at the vulnerability level. What we try and get at in the Top 25 list is the weakness level, i.e. the programming errors that lead to vulnerabilities, such as those that are on the OWASP Top 10. If you do almost a line-by-line comparison, you see a couple items that are in both lists, SQL injection, cross-site scripting, and cross-site request forgery immediately come to mind. However, what's on the Top 25 list includes things like improper input validation, improper encoding or escaping of output, and we get into other things like insufficient randomness. These kinds of things might show up in certain areas within the OWASP Top 10, but they're operating at a lower level. In addition, the Top 25 is much broader than the OWASP Top 10 in terms of the kinds of software that we're covering. So, for example, buffer overflows are at the top of our risky resource management category. And while buffer overflows might have been in the 2004 OWASP Top 10, they quickly decided to remove those from the 2007 version And unless web technology changes a lot, I don't think we would ever expect to see buffer overflows in the OWASP top 10 future versions. That said, that is still a major concern for lots of major software developers who work with unmanaged code. Another example of that is incorrect calculation, where in unmanaged code, if you're performing memory allocations by calculating certain numbers, you might trigger a problem like an integer overflow or something, and then suddenly you're back at having buffer overflows because you haven't allocated as much memory as you thought you were. So the top 25 really covers a broader range of software than the OWASP top 10 does. They are definitely not competitors, however. They are complementary to each other, and I think that's reflected concretely in the fact that I provided support to the 2007 version of the OWASP top 10, and the OWASP membership, including the ISAPI group, Jeff Williams, and some other notable OWASP members, provided feedback on the top 25 as well. So it's not a competitive thing at all.
In fact, CWEs are in the reference fields of the OWASP top 10.
What were some of the contenders? What were like number 26, 27, and so forth?
Well, there's actually two that I view of as number 26. And I think about that because I spent a few days really wrestling with these two items that I thought, oh, these really should be on the top 25, but there just wasn't enough room for them. And one of the deciding factors for leaving them off was the idea of we want to capture these based on a notion of severity times the prevalence. Those two are, one of them is CWE 400, I believe, which is related to resource exhaustion. And the other one, whose CWE I don't remember exactly, I think it's 252, which is unchecked return value. The reason that these were not included actually kind of highlight the decision process for the top 25. In the case of resource exhaustion, well, the impact is a denial of service. Is that a big concern? In certain verticals, it certainly is. But one of the things that I tried to do for the top 25 was to come up with a basic threat model that established a profile for what I referred to as the skilled and determined attacker, and tried to give a notion of risk tolerance in which the stereotypical organization probably is going to view the confidentiality of data and the integrity of their systems as being somewhat more important than full-time availability of those systems. Now, obviously, that is not going to work in some verticals where 100% uptime or the six nines is really required. However, that was one deciding factor for leaving it out of the top 25. In the other case, with unchecked return value, this was something that is recently becoming more important, as we're seeing in, for example, the Linux kernel and in major software vendors' applications, whereby not checking a return value from a function, suddenly you enter an erroneous state where you chug along and you think everything's fine, and whoops, stuff that's bad ensues. The severity of that can vary widely, but the thing that left it out of the top 25 was the notion of prevalence, that there aren't a lot of indications that it is an extremely prevalent situation at this point in time. Now, it may well be that it's just not being researched frequently enough at this point, and maybe in future years we will see it on the top 25 list. One thing that I think was interesting, though, was within a couple days of me having decided to leave the unchecked return value off of the list, there was a pretty nasty Linux kernel bug that dealt with exactly an unchecked return value that allowed a local user to gain root privileges. So that's one indication, I think, that the top 25 list is really just a starting point. It carries some diversity in it because you're dealing with a lot of different kinds of software. But if you're just going to restrict yourselves to the top 25, there's only so far that you're going to get. So it's really just a starting point, not the finishing point.
For those that aren't well educated in this whole area, it may be their first endeavor into this And it's that great majority of people that really haven't gotten into the swing of dealing with their applications as a security issue that the top 25 was meant to bring to the table. And we think, given the uptake in the news, different channels, the fact that Fortune Magazine and USA Today, as well as many of the developer discussion sites, all picked up and have continued to talk about these is great. It really brings people that we've been trying to bring this message to get to care about these things, at least conversing about the issue, the trade-offs, and the need to put resources to this area.
With the top 25 list, I went through a couple examples of some of the decision-making that left items off of that top 25. However, we documented a lot of this thinking with respect to the change logs that are on the MITRE top 25 site. And in addition, we also provide a separate section called On the Cusp, which lists a number of the different weaknesses that were nominated for the top 25 and almost made it but didn't quite make it. So for people who think they have a pretty good handle on what's in the current top 25, might want to take a look at the On the Cusp items as well to think one step ahead of their competitors.
The top 25 list itself is mostly pulled directly out of the underlying CWE entry material, except for the paragraph or two of describing the issue. Those are pretty new, but all of the other material comes from an underlying pool of knowledge on each of these issue areas. So right now there's a link for technical details or more technical details where you can find things like code examples, and you can find references to books on the topics and so on. So when people are looking at the top 25, don't just stop at that document. Really dig into the individual CWE write-ups and all the details that they provide. And that's really where the developer community, I think, has been getting their value out of that list.
Are there tool vendors who are specifically claiming that their tool will look for and find CWEs?
There are tools that look for CWEs, whether they label them with that or not. But the top 25 actually encompasses things that are design level issues. So you're not going to find tools, at least with today's technology, that deal with that. The idea, though, is that there are tools that can help institutionalize, so you get consistency looking for these things. And also, any developer that has more than 100 lines of code to manage is going to welcome some tools that can help them look through it. Interesting blog post from Microsoft a little while ago was about their secure software development lifecycle, and they basically analyzed it and compared it to the top 25 CWE's concepts, and about three-quarters of the top 25, they had tools to help them address. They also addressed all of them, I think, except for one, with education and training. For some reason, they didn't address 494, the download of code without integrity check, but they also noted that they may be changing that. So when talking to the vendors in this space, the Veracode, the Fortify, the Ounce, and the different web application scanning tools from HP and IBM and Sensic and so forth, they pretty much cover the ones that tools can find. But for these design concepts and so forth, it's really going to be training your development team, your designers, so that they can actually walk through those issues and figure out how to avoid them. Now, That said, Steve mentioned the ASAPI work. The whole concept of, you know, creating libraries and routines that correctly do some of these really hard things, and then making sure your organizations use those instead of rolling their own. Think about cryptography. People don't roll their own cryptography, or at least they shouldn't be, because it is hard to do. You get well-vetted, you know, libraries implementing cryptography, and then you use them. The whole idea of doing that same concept for some of the hard things like vetting input is just a no-brainer, and I don't know why we hadn't thought of it before.
One of the areas where I think there's a lot of opportunity for future research is to really understand the relationship between mitigating technologies and programmer practices and what weaknesses those kinds of practices actually address. With respect to ASAPI, the ASAPI page includes a mapping to specific CWEs that I had done, not in light of the top 25 per se, but I think in general that's an interesting area for the community to look at in the future, is which of these certain kinds of mitigations wind up addressing which certain kinds of weaknesses. So we can move from a badness-o-meter, as Gary McGraw refers to it, more towards a goodness-o-meter of good practices with real clear knowledge of what it is that we're actually preventing when we follow those practices.
The top 25 says that input validation is the number one killer of software, but I see a lot of folks who talk about command injection and SQL injection and cross-site scripting, and they talk about that as an input validation issue incorrectly. What's the real solution for these classes of injection vulnerabilities?
I think a lot of people believe that things like SQL injection, cross-site scripting, command injection, anything injection-related is really just a lower-level example of input validation. However, while input validation might be a useful technique that in some cases can accidentally help to prevent those issues, when you get to injection-level issues, you're really dealing with proper encoding of your outputs, making sure that messages or structured data that you're sending to another component actually has the structure that you really intended. So to think of an example of why these injection issues are not purely input validation, think about in a database context where you're managing phone numbers for employees. You probably have some employees that are named O'Reilly, but if you were to do input validation and to try and protect against SQL injection, one of the things that you would do would be like, oh, if it has an apostrophe in it, then I'm going to reject that. Well, Mrs. O'Reilly probably isn't going to be very happy with that missing apostrophe there. But if you generate your SQL query and appropriately encode your outputs and escape the apostrophes and any other sensitive characters, then Mrs. O'Reilly will see her name properly reflected within the database. So input validation and output and proper output encoding are two sides of a multi-sided coin, but they're really actually distinct. Another reason why we have lower-level things like SQL injection and other injection issues alongside input validation and output encoding is partially because a lot of people within the top 25 group just vociferously advocated for it, so couldn't entirely say no. Prevalence data, certainly based on CVE, and I think it's also reflected in the consulting industry, prevalence data is extremely high for issues like cross-site scripting and SQL injection. I think it also, in some sense, reflects a transition of understanding where we try and move from attacks and vulnerabilities to what the real programming mistakes are that are underneath. So while everyone might think of SQL injection as this vulnerability or maybe as an attack, if you look at how it's actually phrased within the top 25 and within CWE, we call it a failure to preserve SQL query structure. It's a slightly different way of looking at it, but it gets a little bit closer to the notion of the weakness side of things.
So what's next for the top 25 team?
Part of the answer is you tell us. We're delighted with the great response that it got, both positive and critical. We think it's definitely performed its task as raising awareness. However, there are things like its inclusion in New York State's contract language for secure software, incoming inquiries for people who maybe want to standardize against it, that is really causing us to take a step back and decide, okay, how do we properly present this in an appropriate context that's not going to get people confused with other similar or related efforts, such as the OWASP Top 10 and secure software contract language? And how do we also build on the attention that it's received and continue to use it as an awareness and educational tool to the broader developer community?
And one of the things we're trying to do is, in focusing so many engaged people on reviewing and coming up with the top 25, we really improved the quality of the discussions that the CWE underneath capture and present in the mitigations and preventions and so forth. And that needs to be done for more of CWE. So as people have issues they care about, or they have ways of preventing or blocking issues from having impact on the actual application, we'd love to hear from them. The whole idea behind CWE was, one, to be a corpus of knowledge that people can leverage in their work. It was also meant to be a place where tool vendors could use so that they have consistency in what they find and what they report, at least. I'm not saying that every tool should find everything, but if they do find and report the same thing, it's really nice if it's called the same thing. So that's another purpose of this. But the real bottom line is, as a person using software or buying software, CWE and the Top 25 lets you focus on what kinds of concerns and requirements you should be stating to the people who are developing it for you or selling it to you.
At the core of it, the Top 25 is a conversation starter. It's a conversation starter between developers and their project management. It's a conversation starter between security consultants and reluctant CXOs who aren't sure whether or not they really need to be paying attention to software security. And it's a conversation starter between developers themselves.
So just one last wrap-up for myself. Just earlier today, I was talking with Will Pelgrin, who's the person at New York who put together the procurement language that invokes the Top 25. And he pointed out a subtlety that's probably pretty critical. That agreement is meant for people you hire to write software for you. It is not meant for your purchase agreement to go buy commercial off-the-shelf software. So when people look at the wording, that distinction is critical. I mean, things I would obligate somebody making a custom house for me, I would never put in the purchase agreement, for a mobile home or something that I'm just buying off the lot.
So, Steve and Bob, I want to thank you both very much for taking the time to interview with us on the OWASP podcast series. Do you have any final thoughts before we finish up here today?
The one thing that we may have overlooked is, where can I find more about this information you've been talking about? So cwe.mitre.org is where you can find CWE in general. And if you put a top 25, I guess a slash top 25 at the end of it, you'll get to the pages we were referring to where the change logs and the on the cusp, as well as the top 25 document itself. If you want to look at the Will Pelgrin's contract clause and play around with that, You can go to the SANS website, www.sans.org/top25, and that material is there. And as an audience familiar with OWASP efforts, you'll see a lot of material that was reused from the OWASP contract wording, and you'll see the attribution of that.
You've been listening to OWASP Podcast Number 11, an interview with Steve Christie and Bob Martin of the MITRE Corporation, recorded on February 23rd, 2009. OWASP, the Open Web Application Security Project, is a worldwide free and open community focused on improving the security of application software. For more information, please visit www.owasp.org.